Welcome to a special episode of Pondering Pods. In this episode, I chat to Alan Bunnell, OBE, adopted person and co-founder of Family Futures. Alan talks about his experience of contact as an adopted person in a professional setting and how contact and the approach to supporting contact has changed over the last 40 years. Our conference, Contact in Context, is a virtual event taking place on the 20th of October, 2023. Alan will be co-hosting Workshop 3 with adoptive parent Alison. The workshop will explore how you can support your child when they make contact with birth family members online. Tickets are still available with a range of payment options. For the full programme for the day and to book your place, you can visit our website, www.familyfutures.co.uk.
Welcome to another episode of Pondering Pods with the Family Futures podcast. I'm Charlotte Mumford, hosting today, and I'm chatting with Alan Bunnell. I will let you introduce yourself.
Fine. My name is Alan Bunnell, as you just said.
In a bit more depth, yeah.
OBE, I have to say.
Yes.
I'm very privileged to have the OBE. It was granted because of my long-standing career work with adopted children and families, and I feel very proud of that. My experience of adoption started when I was an infant baby. I was adopted not at birth. My birth mother gave birth to me in a mother and baby home, and I spent 6 weeks there, and then I was given to my adoptive parents, with whom I got on very well, and, you know, in many ways, in every way probably, I see them as my parents. And I grew up not knowing very much about my adoption experience. I don't want to sound flippant about it, but you know, the message that I got from my adoptive parents was that my birth mother loved me so much she gave me away, which gave me to, which I thought was
a little confusing.
That's a bit odd. Anyway, I, you know, as time went on, I got a clearer picture that I was a loved child, but there was no real information. And I didn't really think about contact or searching until I was an adult, really, and I began work with the Post-Adoption Centre with Phyllida Sawbridge when she set it up. And a lot of our work then was with helping adopted people reflect upon their experience of adoption, and many of them wanted to trace their birth parents, and also birth parents wanted to trace their children. And also, of course, you know, adopted parents who, some of whom were struggling with their adopted children, particularly in middle childhood. So that obviously triggered a lot of thoughts and feelings within me. And it was having my own child, first child, really pushed me to the point of thinking, hang on, how could you give away a baby like this, you know that you love and care about so much? So I said, no, I'm going to trace. And I did get somebody to trace for me, and they found that actually both my birth parents were dead by the time I was looking for them. But I did meet some birth relatives, which was extremely helpful because they filled in a lot of gaps.
Yeah.
And to be fair to my adoptive parents, they didn't know very much either. And when I, before doing the actual tracing, when I got my information through Section 51 counselling, I think it was called, the counsellor gave me a sort of two-sides sheet of A4 notebook, A5 notebook. On one side, in pencil, was written information about my birth father, and on the other side was information about my birth mother.
Wow.
Height, you know, background, occupation, interests, and that was about it.
But quite factual, it sounds like.
Very factual. And no reason. No real description as to why the adoption took place and whether she felt she needed to have me adopted. So growing up as an adopted child, you know, I wasn't that curious about birth relatives, as I said earlier. It was only when a child was born that I wanted to trace them. And I think that opened up a lot of issues for me, because I thought how difficult it is for many people to grow up as adopted people, not knowing enough about their past.
Mm.
And I was already working in the field of adoption at that time, and then became aware that the contemporary adoption scene is very different from the baby adoption scene of the 50s when I was adopted, and that the children adopted today, as in then, which was 1980s, but still true now, are children who've been adopted out of the care system, and they've been removed because of abuse and neglect in the majority of cases. So the whole concept of contact and information exchanges and knowing about your birth parents is very different, I think. Mm. The first time I engaged in facilitating a contact between an adopted person and their birth mother was 30 odd years ago at the Post Adoption Centre, when I'd done quite a bit of work with this young person and his adopted parent. And the only resolution, it seemed, to his questions and his upset and distress was to see if he could meet his birth mother, which we did. We tracked her down and she came to the centre and she met with the young person, and that went very well, actually, and it was the start of an ongoing relationship. But at that time, contact and opening up contact with a teenage person who'd been a baby adoption effectively was quite a revolutionary and radical thing to do.
Obviously or logically, all contact would be done on a case by case basis.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a sort of standardized, there wasn't a framework, it wasn't a common conversation with every adopted person that they might want contact or, I guess, life story work or support in that way. It was quite different. And maybe that was just because of loads of reasons, but like there was no internet, so you couldn't just Google someone.
No.
It was much more of a process.
I mean, it was very different because in baby adoptions, there was very little information about the birth families, birth parents, and what information there was, even if it was passed on to the adopted person, you know, didn't really, I think for the majority of people, really satisfy their need for information. So the post-adoption was set up partly to deal with the huge number of adopted people who wanted to find their birth parents and get more information about them and look at their records and so on. But that was a very different sort of scenario, I think, from the more contemporary scenario where often parents are given some information about the child's background and know a bit about what happened to them. Often, in my experience, adopted parents don't really know how to convey that information to the child because it's often distressing, you know, they were neglected or abused and so on. And so it was at the post-adoption centre that it really made me think that giving children information and knowledge about their history and origins is so important, because without that they can't really make sense of who they are and why they are where they are and why they went into care. And then the logical consequence of information is often for many children is, well, why this, why that, where are they now, what's happening, do they think about me now? Did they really do those things to me that the social worker said they did? Is there any way of meeting them? So at the Family Futures, we set up arranging contacts where possible for young people who've been through life story work. And when I say life story work, they didn't just go through an album or a book. It was often 6 months or longer. Quite intensive, regular therapy sessions when we looked developmentally at each stage of their development and the things that had happened to them and what the impact of those relational events and traumatic events were on their development and how they related to other people now, to their adoptive parents, how they perceived themselves. Did they see themselves as good or did they see themselves as a bad person who couldn't be loved and couldn't be liked? And all that groundwork done with life story work is so important, really, for setting the context for contact, I think, because it's not just then meeting up with your birth parents with very little knowledge about who they are, what happened in the past, why you're in the care system, and so on. It's very important, I think, that contact is informed contact. It's developmentally appropriate and it's child focused. I think if it meets those criteria, then it's what I would say good contact.
Yeah.
If it fails to meet those criteria, then I think it's not good contact. So I think the debate that goes on cyclically in social work and in adoption about contact and open adoption shouldn't be just about whether it's, you know, the child's or the birth parent's human rights to have contact with their children. I think it has to be seen in the context of informed, meaningful contact triggered by the child with the support of their adoptive parents or kinship carers or special guardians or foster carers. And that it meets the developmental needs of that child to help them have a clearer picture about who they are. Because one of the key factors, I think, in for many adopted children, particularly those in the contemporary adoption scenario, is that because they come into care when they're 2 and 3 years of age, when their thinking is very omnipotent and egocentric, they think they're somehow responsible for coming into care. They were a bad child. They didn't look after their birth parents well enough. And that sort of archaic or infantile perception of cause and effect lingers on in children. And this, through life story work, you can say, no, that's not actually what happened and why it happened. And it's not because you're a bad person. It's because your birth parents couldn't look after you. Because often, you know, they weren't properly cared for as children themselves. And so, you know, life story work is often transgenerational. So contact, I think, particularly between birth family members, adult family members, needs to be set in that context. And sibling contact, which everybody says is a good thing, is a good thing. But again, children and sibling relationships are complex, and even if children have been placed together as a sibling group or sibling pair, the dysfunctional parenting that they had in their birth family will have impacted the nature of their sibling relationship. So we, over the years, have done a lot of contact issues where even if children were having sibling contact or were part of a sibling placement, that their contact needed to be, and their relationship needed to be informed by their history and some of the misperceptions changed, you know, by them having factual information. And sometimes I think the actual fact of contact when birth parents are open and honest and child-centered can be really healing paradoxically, despite all the psychobabble that we can get caught up in, often I think children, all they really want to hear is that their birth parents are sorry.
Mm.
They didn't, you know, they are sorry. And also that the things that happened did actually happen.
Yeah.
And they're sorry for that. And I think that can be often the most healing event, really.
Mm.
So that's why I think feel positive about contact, provided it's been carried out in the right context.
Yeah.
And that the child, adoptive parents, foster carers, kinship carers, and the birth parent are all prepared and in a way scripted so they can understand why this is such an important event for the child.
So what would you say to parents or professionals attending? Because you're co-hosting workshop 3 with Alison, who's an adoptive parent,
yeah.
Who, we won't get into that, but she experienced contact where it was, contact happened online,
yeah,
prior to their knowledge as, yeah, parents, prior, yeah, to really any, yeah, work being done.
Yeah.
What would you say to parents or professionals looking to attend the conference or thinking about attending, what they will kind of come away with?
Well, I hope in terms of this particular workshop, they'll come away with a clearer framework about how to deal with these situations.
Mm.
And I hope also they will see them not just as, you know, potential disasters or adoption failures, but they will see it as children and birth family members expressing unmet needs for information and for some kind of relationship, mm, with each other. And that can be managed in a way that it can be very positive for the child and for the birth family as well.
Yeah.
But I think the danger is, of course, is that if contact is made without any parental or professional intervention or facilitation, is it can be re-traumatizing because the child is flipped back,
yeah,
to the relationship they had when they were infants,
yeah,
with the birth parent, where they felt maybe guilty for what happened or idealized the birth parent, birth family members.
Yeah.
And that's where life story work is so important, because it does actually provide a meaningful context for who the people are involved in the contact.
Yeah. And we've spoken a lot about adoptive parents sort of trying to support contact that has happened or is happening, but foster carers are often managing contact,
yes,
already when the, yeah, child comes to them. What would you say to foster carers who are looking to attend, foster parents, or kinship carers, SGO parents, walking away with kind of same, I guess, knowledge of support they can reach out
for?
Well,
I think in that context, probably children and foster carers and other carers often think that contact is something that's done to children.
Yeah.
Because it's regarded as something that has to happen. And as foster carers in particular, it's something they feel they have to comply with. And some of the arrangements that get made where children are taxied to contact centres from the foster home, I think it's shocking, really. I mean, I often say to social workers, you know, would you send your child alone or with a stranger to the dentist in a taxi? Well, no, they wouldn't. But we do it often to children in contact arrangements, because the foster carers are anxious about having the birth family members in their home. They want it done at a contact centre. They don't feel empowered or it's appropriate for them to be there.
Mm.
But I think, as with adoption, it's very important the child feels safe and supported by whatever carer or parent is involved in their life. Otherwise, I think children feel often betrayed by their foster carers, who were subjecting them to contact, which they might be delighted to see their birth parent, but it's not always straightforward.
Mm.
And it can be highly anxiety making for them. They don't know what to say, what to do. Sometimes birth parents and birth relatives don't turn up. Children in care, having contact, need the same level of care as a birth child in a biological family would expect to have when they're dealing with a highly complex and anxiety-making situation.
Yeah.
And that's not often the situation. So I think the model, getting back to your question, the model that we're advocating is one that foster carers hopefully will learn from and be able to advocate for within their agency, and maybe understand why contact is important for children, but it has to be child focused and not just some statutory regulation that they have to comply with.
And give them some kind of empowerment to help facilitate that contact.
Yes, and to prepare the child for it and to... I can't generalise about foster carers, but I think in an ideal world, foster carers, adoptive parents, all of us should learn to be emotionally articulate when it comes to dealing with children in these sort of situations, and prepare them by, you know, sharing how you feel about them going to contact, how they might feel about going to contact, and how they might feel when they come back.
Mm.
How did it go for you, and what did it feel like? Even if foster carers can't manage the contact, they can facilitate it by preparing the child and helping the child recover from what inevitably, even if it went well, is a highly emotive experience, and one which inevitably will raise all sorts of questions for the child. And it's important that somebody is there when they return who can help the child express those questions, anxieties, fears and joys about the contact. Otherwise they're just bottled up and acted out.
Mm. Thank you, Alan. A very insightful conversation.
Thank you.
I look forward to listening to your workshop on the 20th of October at our conference, Contact in Context.
I think it's important, this conference, because it's not just about is contact a good thing or a bad thing. It's about putting contact in the context of the developmental needs of the child. And that's not always done.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Family Futures podcast. If you have a topic suggestion or an idea for a pod, we'd love to hear from you. You can email contact@familyfutures.co.uk with your thoughts and any feedback. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe. And thanks for listening.